Texting between two different kinds of phones makes photos blurry, ugly, and security risky. Not just that, it also makes video calling, editing messages, or leaving a group nearly impossible. With WhatsApp, everyone can enjoy seamless messaging with the protection of end-to-end encryption. Streamline your messages across all devices on WhatsApp. Message privately with anyone you want. Click the banner or download now to learn more.
Today on Sticks In, we are back after a bit of a break to enjoy World Championships, enjoy the 4th of July, and all the wonderful lacrosse we've had over the last couple weeks. On today's episode, we will do some takeaways from World Lacrosse Championships. We'll take a quick look at the upcoming PLL slate for Minnesota, and we have an awesome interview with Redwoods attackman and current league leader in points and goals, Ryder Garnsey, is on the pod today. We talked to Ryder about getting into coaching at Notre Dame, his style of play, his goals for the year, and a whole bunch more. If you're enjoying the pod, please do leave a like, leave a subscription, a review, 5 stars, a rating, whatever it is that your podcast platform allows you to do. Let me know you like it, and let's talk. It is Thursday. Welcome to a little off-schedule episode of the Sticks In podcast. It's been a little while since we had an episode. Took a little bit of a breather in there for the start of summer, as it were, the beginning and the end of the World Lacrosse Championships in San Diego. The PLL was a little on a break there for international play as well, so I took one too. Celebrated the 4th of July with my family. I hope you had a wonderful 4th with whoever it was that you celebrated with. But we are back for some lacrosse. The pro season is resuming. But before we get back into that pro season, the PLL in particular, going to Minnesota this weekend, it's just a couple of things I wanted to kind of call out from the kind of the major points of the World Lacrosse Championship, the things that I really took away and that I really enjoyed. First, USA Canada for gold. It always felt like it was going to go that way. They opened up the tournament, you know, that first night with a nice lax after dark kind of start. If you're on the East Coast, you're on the West Coast, you didn't get it. But East Coast here, we got those 10 p.m. starts for the duration. So my sleep schedule is a little thrown off. But I very much enjoyed USA Canada on opening night. International play, whenever you see it, it hits you like a ton of bricks because it's not like any other version of the sport anymore. There is no shot clock. The field is enormous. Face-offs and possession are basically just everything, are huge. Having the ball is massive. I talked about it kind of in a couple other places. I talked about it with the Crease Dive guys and you know, a couple other podcasts you might have seen. But part of me really hoped that in that first game, that USA-Canada game, the two teams might just go out there and say, you know what, yeah, the discipline can be slow. No shot clock. Possession is king. Field's huge, but you know what? Let's just floor it. Let's just run it like it's a pro game, put the pedal down and go up and down and showcase what this is all about. I really hoped that they would do that, but obviously strategically there is no reason to do that. You never would, so they didn't. They played pretty close to the vest in the opening night. They were pretty cagey, didn't show a ton of stuff. All, of course, you know, in anticipation of a rematch in the gold medal game that both sides, I'm sure, we're planning for from day one, from the day of roster construction, really. You know, those rosters were built to say, all right, this group can beat Canada, this group can beat the U.S. So we didn't see a ton of that opening game. It was still a great game. It was still fun. There was some heat at the end of it as guys were mixing it up. You saw, again, these are the best players in the world playing for their country. It's great stuff. Plenty of exciting games outside of just USA-Canada. There were a lot of games that went to OT. There were games that had, you know, a pretty good up and down pace. And I said it during the gold medal game. Those USA-Canada games are really the evidence you need that the rule set of international lacrosse, you can still play a great game that way. Is it antiquated? Antiquated is a word that I think Quint used on opening night to describe it as fans were first tuning in. Yeah, he's right. It's the right way to describe it. It's a little antiquated, right? If you go watch, you know, some high school lacrosse or something in an area that doesn't play by NCAA rules yet or still plays Federation rules with no shot clock, it can look a little bit like that, with very, very long possessions that are very drawn out and the stall thrown on and all that kind of stuff. The college game has long passed that by. The pro game, of course, is very long past that by, both indoor and outdoor, go up and down much faster, much more, you know, sort of skill and speed involved there. But, you know, you still got some really good games. So they can happen. It's not going to go the same way where somebody can hit a two-pointer at the end or, you know, somebody can dive through the crease or you know, you get some BTB goal as time's winding down or a goalie gets pulled for the extra man in the indoor game or something like that. But you still get some good games. And I very much enjoyed the games. A couple of players I thought really put together some great weeks. Obviously, Brendan O'Neill. My goodness, what a fortnight, what a couple weeks he had. 5 goals for him and in the gold medal game and tournament MVP for him. And as I said on Twitter, his MVP at the World Lacrosse Championship came 1 month to the day of winning the Tawarit. That's a one of one. Nobody's doing that but him. It's really pretty special. I think coming into the year, last season, there were people, hey, look, I'll say it now. Before last season, on the preseason All-American teams, I had Brendan O'Neill on the second team. That obviously changed by mid-year. By the end of the year, no-brainer, and I was calling for him to get the Tawarin, of course. But I still think that, you know, there's a world where he holds on to the things that got said about him after Final Four weekend, where Notre Dame guarded him very well, limited his production, and people were saying, ah, he's fine, but look, he couldn't beat Chris Fake, couldn't hang with Notre Dame. I think that performance you saw against Canada is a precursor to a man who's going to go on the field next spring and be like, watch this. There's nobody out here who can stop me. They couldn't stop me at Worlds. You won't stop me in college. So I think that could be the precursor to a special kind of year for him, for his next season there in Durham. But he wasn't the only youngster having himself a week. Albany's Jake Pacino obviously was the defender of the tournament. I thought he was really, really spectacular. He put a lot out there on tape that would, I'm sure, entice PLL coach/GMs who will be interested in his service in the next draft. High school student Stone Evans, who's a rising senior at Cushing in Massachusetts, and of course a Connecticut guy, so how can I not love him? He's from the great state. But he was, you know, one of the kind of the big stories of the tournament, along with Jamaica as a whole. Evans was putting together some highlight plays. He really was, along with Kari Sears, their most, you know, sort of dynamic players on the offensive end. But the two of them were really exciting. And look, Jamaica had a top 10 finish. Automatically qualified for the next world championship. That's what Grow the Game looks like. When Jamaica is locking themselves up a spot in the next Worlds 4 years in advance. So that was definitely very fun to see. And I liked what TLN did, picking an all-world team, but limiting themselves to one player per country. Obviously, it makes it tough because, you know, when you put Austin Stotts on the team, you can't put Jake Pacino on the team anymore. You can't put anybody else who had a ridiculous tournament for the Haudenosaunee out there. Same thing with USA. You got to pick one USA player. So, but it draws attention to guys outside of Pool A. Pool A being where the top 5 teams in the world are. So the U.S., Canada, you know, Haudenosaunee, England, and Australia. It draws attention to those countries outside of Pool A, where, you know, that big 3 group that had an awesome tournament and are worthy of some attention. Are they playing in the PLL this weekend? No, but they looked awesome. And they were very entertaining in San Diego. Per Anders Olters from Germany, I thought was awesome. Was one of the leading goal scorers of the tournament. Logan Ipp, who's playing at Harvard right now, another college guy, playing for Hong Kong and was willing them to victory in playoff games in the end of their last pool play game, you know, where they were basically playing for a spot either in the playoffs or in placement, put the team on his back. Was Greg Jennings out there. So Logan Ipp was great. And Ryan Richters for Latvia in net. One of the better goalie performances of the tournament, statistically speaking. So, you know, those are guys where you like to see kind of a way to shout out those guys. They're not getting put on the all-world team. The all-world team was 10 guys. 9 of them were from the USA, Canada, or the Haudenosaunee. Shout out to Shinya Tateishi from Japan, who was the lone guy, not from that group, who had just a preposterously productive tournament and was named all-world attack. So, again, that Japanese team was such a fun story. You know, you look at, I had put out kind of the content of here's everybody in the PLL who's playing at Worlds. Here's all the guys who are playing in or recently graduated from or went to, you know, college in the States or whatever that are playing. And the list is just massive. But there's nobody from Japan on. Nobody on Japan's team in that regard. And that's a credit to the way that the sport has grown in that country. And it stems to Johns Hopkins going over there, whatever, 40, 50 years ago and dropping off some sticks and getting some people interested in lacrosse. And now those people that they handed sticks to, their kids, their friends, that's how the game grows. They got excited about it. And look, maybe it takes that long. But when you get there, man, is that a fun story. Man, is Japan special. So I will keep watching international lacrosse to see Japan play as often as I can because they play with so much joy and fun, especially on the offensive end. So, you know, for more in-depth takeaways from Worlds, I do have a written piece over at sticksandlacrosse.com where I kind of wrote down a little more calling out some of the great stories and the players I saw during the week and things that I really enjoyed. So definitely go check that out if you want to kind of put a nice little bow on your World Lacrosse Championships experience. But now I am really excited about our guest this week. He's currently absolutely crushing the PLL. He's on SportsCenter every week, somehow. He's flourishing in that regular lefty lineup spot. He's leading the league in goals. He's leading the league in points. He's just, you can't miss him right now. Redwoods attackman Ryder Garnsey joins the pod. Let's throw it over to that interview. Enjoy. Hey, joining the Sticks in Lacrosse podcast now is the current leader in goals and points in the PLL, Redwoods attackman, Ryder Garnsey. Ryder, thank you for making some time for me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to chop it up.
So I kind of like to start by going back a little ways and, you know, starting by looking at basically the beginnings of your college career as a very well-regarded recruit coming out of New Hampshire. You go to Notre Dame. Was it always going to be Notre Dame for you? Or, you know, what set Notre Dame apart from what I can imagine were plenty of other interested schools?
I wouldn't say that it was always going to be Notre Dame. I think that Notre Dame was always at the top of my list. But they told me I had to PG, quite honestly. So I looked around a little bit. You know, ultimately, obviously settled on Notre Dame. Was okay with that extra year of high school, which I wasn't crazy about at the start. But honestly, I think it was beneficial for me both, you know, on and off the field. I think I probably could have learned a couple more things off the field to make my time there a little bit more seamless. But I definitely think it was beneficial. But yeah, I think that I loved everything about Notre Dame. The only thing that I guess made it not Notre Dame from the jump was that PG year. But I love everything about Notre Dame, and I think that's, you know, clear with me still being there coaching.
Yeah, you know, and you mentioned kind of, you know, the PG year being helpful for you to learn a little bit more, mature a little bit more. And I think by the end of your college career, I think if you would have asked random people, you know, like Ryder Garnsey, coach at Notre Dame, people probably would have said, you know, I don't think so. But it's been a successful endeavor for you so far. So what has kind of getting into coaching kind of taught you about yourself and about lacrosse?
You know, I've always loved lacrosse basically more than anything. So I think that it was sort of a natural progression for me. Now at Notre Dame, when, you know, when I was playing there, I probably would have said you were crazy too, in terms of if I was going to be there in, you know, 5 years after I was done playing there. But I think, like you said, you know, I matured quite a bit. I value the loyalty that coach showed to me over the course of my time there so much that I think that is a big part of why I'm still there. I love the fact that coach is the only, well, now, not the only coach, but basically the only coach that's been at Notre Dame forever. Like, just the way that he operates the program. Like, there's so many things that I really, really value. And so I think that that was like the biggest thing for me sticking around. I didn't see myself living in South Bend 10 years after I got there, but I think that I love everything that I'm doing there so much that while South Bend is in the, you know, this bustling metropolis, I'm really happy to be there still. I think that it's certainly taught me a lot about, I think that I've learned a lot from the guys that I coach in terms of their preparation, sort of seeing the things that, you know, I wasn't doing that our best players are doing. And I hopefully have learned some of those things. And I think that I've learned some of those things that they are things that they do that make them successful that I wasn't necessarily doing when I was in their shoes. And hopefully I'm a little bit better at those things now.
So you've had the chance now to play and coach, like you mentioned there with Coach Corrigan. You've obviously played now for Coach St. Laurent. You've played now a bit for Junior. When you think about these coaches that impacted you most as a player, what do you find yourself most inspired by about them? You kind of mentioned Coach Corrigan and his loyalty and his staying with that program so long. What about some of these other coaches that you've had?
I've been really fortunate to have played for some great guys. Certainly Coach. I think the thing that I like the most about him is that he's him from the second he wakes up in the morning to the second that he goes to bed. And I didn't always appreciate that because, you know, he's hard on me like he should have been. But I think like a guy like Junior is certainly, more creative. He sees the game probably more similarly, he sees the game in a similar way that I do, whereas Coach Corrigan probably not as much. You know, he's more of a traditional two-handed, two hands on the stick, two-handed ground balls. Now, he's certainly changed a little bit, and I like to think that I have a small impact on that. And Coach Duran is a great leader. Now, obviously, he has, you know, served our country, so I think that sort of speaks for itself. But I think that he does a great job of getting guys to buy in, and sort of keeping us focused on the same goal. The job is a little bit different. So I think that it allows him a little bit more freedom, right? Like Coach Corrigan is coaching 18 to, you know, 21 to 2-year-old kids, right? So he's sort of got to be, you know, the bad guy all the time. Nat doesn't necessarily have to be all the time, but I think he's done a good job of finding the balance of when he needs to be, you know, the guy, because the buck stops with him eventually. You know, like, if he's not holding the standard, then nobody is. So I think that we do a pretty good job of making it easy on him, that he doesn't have to be that guy all the time, but I think he does do a good job of recognizing when that needs to be done and sort of laying down the law. And I think CC has done a great job of sort of, you know, because when he came in, we still do have a lot of Notre Dame guys. So you're not going to change the way that all of those guys play, right? But I think that he's done a great job of seeing what they do, what they have been doing for a while, and not just saying like, okay, we're going to run that out, right? Because you don't want the coach to be doing that, but taking the parts that he agrees with and that our guys are good at, and keeping them in place, and then adding wrinkles where, you know, we might have struggled in the past, or just, you know, helping guys learn new things and get better at them that are going to be successful in this league, because, you know, the things that they learned previously were not under the same rules or with all the same guys. Not everybody played at Notre Dame, obviously, so you can't just run the same thing out there and expect to be successful. So I think that all three of our coaches really have done a great job of respecting the fact that we've got a bunch of good, smart lacrosse players who have backgrounds and trying to put them in positions where they're comfortable, but at the same time, like, cultivating this vision for our team, because not everyone has the same background, right? We are on a new mission, really. And our 25 guys are, I think they've done a great job of bringing our 25 guys together towards like the same common goal. And respecting where the backgrounds that we have, but at the same time, like, getting us focused on the same thing.
But roster building obviously is something that's very difficult in the PLL, and tough decisions get made coming into this season, this off season. Obviously, the move that coach makes is to trade the other lefty on the team. I imagine it's a very difficult moment, or an interesting moment, actually, I guess, for you in particular, because you know you see a guy like a Matt Kavanaugh get traded. That's difficult. That's tough, because I'm sure he's an offensive leader for you guys, and he's, you know, a Notre Dame guy as well. But for you personally, this is a move that, okay, this opens the door for more opportunity for you and probably more pressure on you to produce a little bit more, because that's your, you probably are thinking in that moment, that's my spot now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's certainly a fair like way to think about it. I looked at it as like, shit, this is, you know, Matt Kavanaugh getting traded, who's been someone who's like a mentor for me, someone who I have a blast playing with, who I've learned a lot from. So that's immediately where my mind went. But then the more that you're playing, the more you see, like, then I started to think about it from more of like a selfish perspective, really. Like, okay, these are the opportunities that might not have been there with two lefties on the field. And I think that I've been doing a pretty good job of picking those spots and identifying the spots where, you know, maybe Cav or I would have gone, and, you know, towards a goal or whatever the play that needs to be made. And I think that just, you know, it's just natural. You don't have another lefty on the field. Sort of more of those opportunities fall into my lap. And honestly, there's not a lot of pressure. Like, I don't think anybody's going to put more pressure on me than I already put on myself. Like, I expect, and I think all the guys in our league should feel this way. Like, I expect to be really good every time I go out there. So just because Cav is not there anymore, it doesn't, like, in my head, I'm not like, oh man, I got to be better, because I was already thinking that before he got traded. You know, like, I want to be the best guy that I can possibly be. Now, Cav not on the field, that doesn't make me want to be better. I already wanted to be that, and I already expected that for myself. Now, there's just naturally a couple more opportunities here and there, and I think I've done a good job taking advantage of them. But I wouldn't necessarily say that it's like pressure. Maybe from the outside, people think that way, but I don't think that that's the way that I've necessarily thought about it.
When I see you in that role now, and the way I see you play, as I watch, I see someone playing basically with no fear in their game whatsoever. Have you ever felt, or when was the last time you felt, if ever, a tickle of fear or any kind of lack of confidence on a lacrosse field? Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, I mean, when you're not playing well, that's sort of, I think just that's like natural for it to start creeping into your mind. And I guess it sort of ties into your last question. Like, I'm more comfortable. I guess I've just been a little bit more comfortable this year. I've found myself in positions where I have found myself like previously in my career more often. So, I think that that's why I've been a little bit better, but I don't think that, like, I guess to answer your question, no, there's not a lot of times where I walk out on the field and I think fear, but I think that I'm a little bit more comfortable this year just because I'm more frequently in spots where I think that I'm good. In previous years, maybe I was, you know, I don't think I did a great job like adapting to the role that was asked of me previously, because, I don't want to say because Cav, it's not Cav's fault. It's just like, I was asked to play a little bit different of a role than I'm playing this year. So I think that when you do that and then you're not as good, or you're not producing like you feel like you could be, you know, the little bit of doubt starts to creep into your mind. I think that's natural. But I don't think that I've ever walked onto the field thinking that I'm anything but really good. And I think that every player in our league should think that way, because the reality is they are, you know, there's only so many roster spots. It's a really competitive league.
Yeah, you hear people describe the way you play as creative, even maybe improvisational at times. The common descriptor that's been on social lately is this idea that Ryder Garnsey has never scored the same goal twice. How would you describe your style and the way that you play the game?
Yeah, I think that you sort of hit the nail on the head. Like improv is, I'm butchering that word, but you know what I'm trying to say, right? It's a lot of improv.
Yeah, improvisational. Yeah, I gotcha.
But I think that just because the way that I'm physically, my physical capabilities, I think that it leads itself to that. Like, I'm not going to run by somebody, so I sort of am waiting for the defender to make a first move, and then sort of play off of that. And you know, that's not always how it plays out, but I think that in more scenarios than not, that is how it plays out. So I'm reactive rather than like dictating how the play is going to go. In terms of not having scored the same goal twice, I think I've scored a couple from the lefty wing that are probably pretty similar, but yeah, I've seen that on social. I think that's pretty funny. I think Joe Keegs maybe started that. He's a good guy. He's a good follow on social media.
Yeah, I saw it from Joe first, and I think it's people have taken it and run with it. But I've been enjoying it very, very much. Yeah, you know, I mean, you don't wind up on SportsCenter every week. You just keep scoring the same goal over and over again. We keep finding you on SportsCenter. So, you know, obviously to start the year, I've been outstanding. You said at the top, you're leading the league right now in points and goals. You talk about having these high expectations for yourself. Is that where you expected to be, or do you feel like you're even exceeding where you expected yourself to be at this point?
You know, I guess I don't really, I never thought about like going into the year, like, okay, I want to be leading the scoring the most goals in the league. I certainly expected myself to be a really strong contributor for a really good team. So I think that in that sense, I'm exactly where I expected to be. Now, do I expect to have a bunch of points every game? Not necessarily. Like, I think that a lot of things will sort of fall back to the mean. Like, I've played well so far, so maybe that, you know, results in more attention coming to me, and it opens things up for some of the other guys in our offense. So I wouldn't say that I expected to, you know, be leading the league in points, but I certainly expect myself every time that I go out there to be a really good lacrosse player, contributing to winning plays and helping my team win. So yes and no. Yes and no, I guess it's like the simpler way to answer that.
Have you allowed yourself to start thinking I could win the MVP this year, or I could win attackman of the year? Has that entered your mind, or do you allow yourself to even think of those kind of things?
No. It can be hard with my freaking parents and friends. They love to gas me up, but no, I mean, I'm just worried about, first of all, being the chaos this weekend in Minnesota. That stuff. Yeah, I'm not really worried about that stuff, quite honestly. And not, I'm sorry, not to be disrespectful of your question, but that's where my head's at.
Yeah, no, that's a reasonable answer. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, I also believe you're a free agent this summer. Do you start thinking about that at all, or like the way your play impacts your season?
You know, my brother's probably going to kick my ass for saying this because he's my agent, but no, like I'm not going to go anywhere. So if it gets me a couple extra bucks, that's great. But if the difference is not taking those extra couple bucks and we make our team better, then that's what's going to happen. I certainly expect to be with the Redwoods next year. And, you know, as long as they'll have me, like I said at the top, sort of like, I really value loyalty, and that's one of the reasons I love being at Notre Dame. And that's, you know, why I expect to be playing for the Redwoods as long as I'm playing.
Awesome. All right. I got a couple, just quick hitter, fill in the blank here for me at the end. The best player in the league is.
Oh man. Probably Tom Shriver. I mean, he's pretty incredible.
If the league lets me assign the Woods to any home city I want next year, it would be.
You know, it's not a popular answer, but South Bend, because that's where I live. And I think that we could get a couple of the Notre Dame faithful to come out to our games.
You've got the players and you've got the fans that would very much support that. You've got enough Notre Dame guys in and around there.
And we've got a solid stadium. We can make it happen. I'm sure we can rent out our lot during the summer.
All the pieces fit.
Yeah. Guys would like to go back.
The toughest defender that's not on the Redwoods in the league is.
I think for me, I maybe had the most trouble with Matt Dunn. You know, he's really patient and smart. And, you know, I talk about like not being able to sort of like dictate things. And with a guy like that, who sort of just sits back and like I said, is really patient. He's got good feet and he's smart. That's sometimes the toughest guys for me to play against. So yeah, I guess I'll give Matt Dunn that.
The most underrated player in the league is.
Oh man, that's a good one. I think maybe Johnny Sexton. You know, he coming out of college, he probably wasn't as underrated. I think he won the Schmeiser his senior year. But I think just because one of the reasons he's not huge on social media, he's not, you know, he's got another job. It's not lacrosse. He's not blowing up everyone's feed with all the things that he's doing. He's not a loud guy. He just sort of goes about his business and he's really good. I think he was a little bit banged up last year, so maybe that's one of the reasons that he's, you know, doesn't get as much shine, and he's dealt with a couple things since he's been in the league. But man, when that kid is playing well, he is really, really freaking good. And I think he's been great for us this year. And I think that is, you know, he's one of the reasons that we're 2-1. You know, we're only 3 games in the year, but I think that we've played solidly for probably like 4 of the 6 halves that we've played in. I think that Johnny is a big reason for that.
The 32-second shot clock is
a little short, in my opinion. I think I'm not alone in thinking that. You know, I think that, you know, the further that we get into the season, the more time that we've had to sort of tinker with, you know, substitution patterns or different things like that, we might see a better offensive product on those possessions. I don't think that our, at least on our team, and I watch most of the games across the league, so I don't think that this is an uneducated thing to say, but I think that those possessions are just like not as good now. Our guys going to the rack and scoring some goals at the same rate? I don't know. They might be, but it just like, it doesn't feel like we necessarily have enough time. And like I said, maybe we're just not substituting correctly, or, you know, we haven't found whatever it is that we need to do in order to be successful off those possessions. But right now it just feels like it's a little short. I would love to see maybe like another 8 seconds added or something like that. Just to give guys a little bit more chance to play offense. Seems like, you know, if you take a bad shot and the ball goes out of bounds, you're at, you know, 7 seconds, and then at that point you're thinking about dumping it in the corner or subbing guys off. So I think that it's just a little short right now.
Yeah, I think you saw the Water Dogs kind of figure out a strategy with it against the Atlas last week, where they said, look, we're not gonna win these. Trevor's winning all of them, but let's make Trevor go backwards, and then let's make them clear and sub. And by the time they're done, they have, you know, can they beat us on offense, on their offense, when they have 8 or 9 seconds left? We'll take our chances.
Crazy. I mean, we were watching the game on the bus on our way to practice, and then we were practicing across the street. So you could sort of hear what was going on. Like a little bit of momentum was being built, right? And we're thinking in practice, like, okay, there's not a crazy reaction right now if the Atlas just scored a goal to go up by 10 in the fourth quarter. So something has to be going on. And it didn't make any sense early, because the Water Dogs were down quite a bunch and weren't winning draws. So I would have loved to have seen that second half in real time, because I went back and watched some of it. But yeah, they look like they figured it out. Now, are the teams that are winning draws going to, you know, figure out a way to combat that? Probably in some capacity. Like, I don't think you want to go out there and purposely lose 80% of the draws, but it's definitely interesting. You know, like if you are a team that hasn't done well facing off, like, do you just a face off guy? I don't know. Now, I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions, but it's certainly something to think about.
Yeah, I've been pitching that as an idea. As if you know you're not going to win them, or you know the matchup stinks, just dress depth somewhere and try and do what the Water Dogs did.
Yeah, it's not a crazy thought. It's not a crazy thought at all.
And I know, you know, Coach Spallina, Joe Spallina on social media said, if you're on the other end, if you're the Atlas, if you have Trevor, he's going to win 70%+. Don't face off with a pole.
Don't
put Costa Beal and Logan out there or something like that. And it's one less guy to sub, and you're effectively buying time by doing that. You're buying a couple more seconds on that very short clock.
So did they not, and it's bad podcasting, but did they not do that in the Water Dogs Atlas game? Did they never do that?
The Atlas did not do that. They kept sending a pole out there and having the pole out there, and the Water Dogs would face off with like Courier or Gobrecht and just make Trevor go backwards.
Yeah. I mean, those guys know more about face off and wing play than I do, but that seems like something that if you're dominating the clamp, especially that frequently, that you would tinker around with.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it didn't do that.
All right. Last one for you. The last fill in the blank here. The best part of having Junior on the sideline is.
The best part of he's pretty funny, man. He keeps things light. He keeps things light, but he's like the best lefty of all time. So for me, selfishly, like that is awesome, right? Like if I'm not seeing something well, like who else do you want to go talk to rather than the guy who did it better than anybody else from your position? I think, you know, maybe that's not like a specific thing, but like for me, selfishly, that's the best part. There's nobody better to go talk to.
Awesome. All right, man. Well, look, I appreciate you giving me a little bit of time today. Good luck with the Woods in Minnesota. You see you guys taking on the Chaos. It'll be a fun matchup for you. No Jack Rowlett, so you dodge that one. But
I saw that. Yeah, hopefully he heals up, but not before this weekend.
Right. All right, man. Well, thank you again for joining me today.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Have a good one.
All right. Thank you again to Ryder for his time, for joining the pod. I've got him as the leader in the clubhouse for attackman of the year right now. He's probably going to be in that MVP discussion if he keeps up the pace he's been on, you know, as humble as he could be about it, obviously, but he's been off the charts. So he's got a hell of a matchup this week with the Chaos. Redwoods Chaos is a good one. So you know, let's just kind of start looking at the PLL slate there. We'll have the usual PLL primer, the Stixon primer, hitting the Stixon site on Friday morning. Since we've had a bit of a break, we can kind of talk through a couple of things. A little bit of roster news that came out today. It's currently Wednesday, so it came out today. A number of players hit the PUP list on Wednesday morning, coming back from World Championships. Connor Kelly, Jack Rowlett, Jesse Bernhardt, JT Giles Harris, and Ryan Lee, all on the PUP list, so won't be seeing them in Minnesota. Obviously, there's a massive impact to a couple teams there. We'll get into that in a second. Other guys I think you should watch as the 19 and 21-man rosters come out and the injury report comes out as well are the guys who were obviously hurt at Worlds, guys carrying injuries, you know, that we knew about in San Diego but didn't hit PUP yet because maybe they just are taking a weekend. The team doesn't need the roster spot, whatever, just to recover. So you know, you have guys like Michael Earhart, like Matt Dunn, like even Tom Schreiber, guys who might be seeing a little less action this weekend or even off rosters maybe. You know, Earhart didn't play in the second half in that week before the break, that second half in Ohio. He was kind of in and out of the lineup with some injuries in San Diego. So, you know, does he try and battle through for these 2 weeks and then maybe try and we'll see if he's ready for the All-Star game or if he's, you know, historically guys who have been hurt have kind of taken that as a time to heal up a little bit. You know, we'll see what guys try and do now at this point coming back from Worlds because there's no more breaks. There's no more buys. There's no more weekends off for the PLL season from here to the end, every weekend. No more breaks. So there's no more opportunities for them to get a weekend and recover. It's got to be during the week on their own time, getting their own treatment, and trying to figure it out. So there's obviously a couple places that's going to have an impact when you look at the field this weekend. We'll start with today's guest, Ryder, right? No Jack Rowlett means the Chaos have to decide who's going to guard Ryder Garnsey and who's going to guard Rob Pinnell, right? It's this shuffle against an attack that does not have a lot of room to shuffle against it. Look, Blaze Reardon is going to protect you against a lot of maybe mistakes in your defense. He's going to bail you out a few times. Sometimes their defense even plays that way. They play aggressively. They give up a look because, look, it's Blaze. He's going to save everything. But at the end of the day, Jack Rowlett is at worst a DPOY finalist this year. He's a defensive player of the year kind of guy. So it's a big absence. You don't just say, all right, our goal is going to save some because our DPOY's out. Like you're going to miss Jack Rowlett out there. So the Chaos will have to guard an offense that's starting to look more and more like a Chaos type offense. There's a lot more indoor elements, obviously, with Junior on the sideline. So I think that's going to be a fun one. I think that's going to be interesting. You know, I think you'll obviously get good matchups on the other end with, you know, who's going to guard Josh Byrne and who's going to try and win that matchup. And, you know, we'll see how long Owen Grant has to be out. You recall he picked up an injury in Ohio that caused him to miss Worlds, very unfortunately. So, you know, if he can go for Woods, obviously it's huge. If he can't, then he'll have to piece it together with, you know, with Ryan Kennedy or some other options on defense. But, you know, the Woods trying to handle that group of the Chaos, I think is going to be exciting. They've made some roster moves already. Ryan Lee obviously went to the PUP list. We mentioned that. And they released Eli McLaughlin. McLaughlin, it sounded like, was acquired by the Peterborough Lakers and MSL, and it sounded like they expect him to be playing for them soon. So that would obviously mean that he's not going to be available for a PLL season if he plays up there. So that would be kind of like the explanation there. But that frees up some roster spots for the Woods. They have some space. They can add some guys. We'll see what kind of moves they make or if they try and go into battle just kind of with what they have. The Chrome, they are probably getting hit the hardest by this PUP list thing because Bernhardt and JT Giles-Harris both being on it is massive. Mike Manley picked up a back injury right before that international break, so you hope that time off helps and he can go. But this roster right now is going to be a group down low that will probably feature two new starters in front of Sean Scannone. I thought Troy Hettinger played really well in his debut. I thought he was exceptional off the ground. I think he had 5 ground balls in his first game. I think he's a no-brainer to be kind of in the mix down low for them. He could split run with Eli Salama at LSM because he's versatile enough to do that. But it seems like Nick Grill is more comfortable in that spot. So I don't know if it'll be Grill and Salama at LSM and Hettinger down low, hopefully with Mike Manley. And then I guess it'll be Greg Wailright getting his first run of the year. So, you know, that's the 5-man crew that they're kind of figuring it out with. Those are the guys that are available to them. Unless they add somebody, you know, from the player pool, there's not a whole lot of maybe options for them on the defensive end. So Water Dogs won't have Connor Kelly, but if the attack for the Water Dogs is intact, if Sowers and McArdle are out there and good to go off of Worlds, Scannone might be seeing a lot of rubber. There's a lot of weapons out there. So, you know, we'll kind of see how that shakes out and what the Chrome decide to do. You know, they should hopefully have Tarasenko. Tarasenko is a guy who you kind of need to be healthy, and he can play all over the place. And hopefully Connor Farrell gives them a bit of a face-off edge, and they can kind of play defense that way by trying to win more face-offs and try and win possession. Even it's an uphill battle now against that 32-second clock, but face-off possessions are what they are. It's still great. So I would imagine they try and do a little bit of that. We'll see. Archer's Whips, for me right now, it's kind of Grant Ament watch. You know, 2 weeks off from last week, how healthy is that hamstring? Can he get through a full game feeling good, you know, going at max, all that kind of stuff? The offense has been good in his absence. You know, Schreiber at attack, it works. He's still a great, you know, he's got some of the best vision in the world. He's got throw some of the best feeds in the world. And he can play attack, he can play midfield, either one. That skill set is what it is. So, you know, Schreiber was clearly, I think, wearing some injuries in San Diego. It's hard to fathom him missing time in meaningful game action. He's such a draw, number one, for fans. But number two, he's just such an important player. And it feels like it's the kind of thing where he's another guy, you know, maybe he's like an Earhart where, you know, you gut it through this weekend, next weekend, and then maybe come All-Star time, you try and get yourself a little bit of a breather or try and take the foot off the gas a little bit for a weekend and recover and heal up. Another fun one to watch here is what do the Archers start doing with Anasio? When is he back into the mix? Because he looked awesome at Worlds. He looked really, really good for Canada. There's a chance for him to mix it up here with a rookie in Petey Lasala. That's a good way to get Anasio, I feel like, back into a PLL groove, getting him back off that injury, get more used to those PLL rules again. Sisselberger has been great. You know, after San Diego, I think there will be teams that are interested in Justin Anasio if he's available. It's funny, you know, again, there's some more about this in my takeaways from Worlds, but the Archers have in a blink gone from man faceoff is their biggest need to, maybe we can afford to trade one of our faceoff guys. You know, it's just funny how the league works like that sometimes. Cannon's Atlas is kind of a spicy one. After last week, I imagine the Cannons were probably ready to play their next game, like, immediately. Because they look great. They're obviously on cloud nine after getting that win. Coach Holman gets his first. It's the Cannons' first in a long time. I thought they looked excellent. I thought they looked really good. I think the Gavin Adler matchup in this will be interesting. I'd expect he gets Asher Nolting. It's the Cannons' primary ball carrier and attack. That's who you want Gavin Adler on, is their distributor, is the guy he's going to just erase in the game. So that's kind of a no-brainer to me. I'm interested to see how the Cannons try and handle Trevor Baptiste. If they try and do what the Water Dogs did and just force him backwards and try and beat him with a short clock rather than trying to win the ball at all. And I'm interested to see how the Atlas will defend the Cannons' midfield, because the Cannons' midfield is good. Those are the two kind of big ones for me. I think, look, Ryan Drenner and Matt Campbell in particular have been really, really good for the Cannons this year out of the midfield. Campbell is looking like a home run of a pick. Drenner obviously is able to invert well because he's a natural attackman, but he wins in unsettled. He's great down the alley. There's just running him into space anywhere on the field, and he's thriving. It's great. I think Campbell is... There's a lot of incredible players in this rookie class, and there's going to be guys who are already making a name for themselves for Rookie of the Year, you know, whether it's Adler or Sisselberger or Dordovic. Campbell should be in the conversation after 3 weeks. After, whatever, a quarter of the season, he's played well enough to be in there, I think. I think he belongs there. So I think Campbell will be a fun one because he'll get a tough matchup in this. Whether he gets a shorty, if he gets to see Danny Logan, then... You learn a lot about how ready you are for the pros when Danny Logan lines across from you. So, Atlas is coming off that brutal loss. I'm sure forgetting all about it for a couple of weeks, but I did him well. Can just flush that one. But team defense has been an issue for them now basically every week. And the Cannons, like any team in the PLL, can cook you if you don't guard all six. They can move the ball and they can shoot. So, I think that's actually a pretty exciting game. Both those teams are 1-2. Atlas and Cannons have the same record. You're going to learn a little something in that game, I think. Outside of the games, some other cool stuff happening this weekend. PLL's having Indigenous Heritage Weekend in Minnesota. I love those kind of things. Per Paul Rabel, we'll see a number of activations, I think, from the league. It looks like special jersey patches that were designed by Patrick Hunter, who's an Indigenous person and a designer. Support, obviously, for Every Child Matters. And it sounds like Jeremy Thompson's going to be on air doing some broadcasting, some game calling with ESPN, which is very cool. If you know or you've been around lacrosse long enough, you know Jeremy Thompson's one of the best people in the sport. So excited to hear his voice behind a microphone during a game. That's going to be really cool. You know, the league currently does not have, when you look around on active rosters, does not have a ton of Indigenous players. Which is kind of unfortunate, but, you know, like it just is what it is. It's not like you can do much about it, but, you know, you look at the Haudenosaunee team at Worlds, and you look for guys playing in the PLL right now, it's really just like Zed Williams and Kyle Jackson, right? I mean, maybe I'm forgetting somebody, but if you want to count Lyle, I guess you can count Lyle, but he's not playing this summer, so. Obviously, that doesn't prevent the league from acknowledging, you know, obviously the importance of the history of the sport and the people who gave it to the rest of us, and I'm happy every year when they do this, when they do these Indigenous Heritage Weekends, and you know, if you've been to regular PLL weekends, you know they do land acknowledgments before games. There is this strong connection they're trying to maintain to the Indigenous community. So, you know, I think that's a very cool thing that they'll be doing in Minnesota. And finally, you know what? I'll leave this for you, a little teaser here for you. I was talking to a few people today, Wednesday, yesterday, I guess, and once again, I'll remind you of my insane idea for a PLL team to just not dress a face-off specialist. And that came up in some of my conversations. I advocate for this in cases where you feel like you will have such a disadvantage that you won't really win a meaningful number and there's no point in trying. And you should instead use a pole or a D-MIDI or a do-it-all MIDI kind of guy on the draw that can consistently force the opposing specialist to exit backwards. This is what the Water Dogs did with Gobrecht and Courier against Trevor Baptiste. That way, their Fogo has to pick up the ball, handle the ball. They have to clear as much of the field as you can make them clear as possible, and they have to sub. And by the time they're done with all of that, they got like 8 to 10 seconds to play offense. You can do that without a specialist. Dress the extra weapon on offense, the extra depth, wherever you need it, wherever you want to have an extra guy. I have heard from a couple of people, it sounds like it's possible that my theory could be being put to the test this weekend. I really, really hope it happens. But it's very thin, but the rumor is that there is at least one team considering taking the field with a 19-man roster that has no face-off specialist. We'll learn a lot. We'll find out a lot. Again, I don't know if it's 100% going to happen. I know a team has explored the possibility. So we'll find out. But in effect, the PLL with this rule has passed the decision to just kill the face-off, basically, from the league changing the rules to just let the coaches do it. Coaches, you can kill the face-off, just don't take it anymore. You can legitimately just opt out of participating in it now. You can say, I'd rather just try and ride and play defense on a very short clock. So I'm going to guess that offensive efficiency on possessions following a rear exit faceoff win I would guess that efficiency is terrible. I'm going to guess it's very poor. So to me, it's a viable strategy to force somebody into an offense that you know is going to be horribly inefficient. Anyway, that's our episode for today. I thank you very much for joining me. Check out the Weekend Primer for Minnesota at sticksandlacrosse.com. It's got everything you need to find out how to watch the games, when they're on, gambling picks, the lines, the over-unders, analysis of the matchups. Check out those Worlds takeaways on the site. We'll have some more fun features coming there soon. Please do leave a like, subscribe, all that. Thank you so much again to Ryder Garnsey for joining me today, and thank you for sticking around. We'll see you next time.
Members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on.
Crunch Island. He's Jean-Lit Foot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.